The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt from Atlanta. Day two of my dropping in on the American Legislative Exchange Council annual gathering of state legislators in Hotlanta. And boy, is it hot. We had a wonderful lunch at the Varsity yesterday. Dwayne is still looking rather satisfied with your Varsity. Are you okay with your Varsity, Mr. D?
I am. It was a fine chili dog and burger combination.
When Dash sat down, he had a fan come over. Alan came over and said hello to Dash.
You'll notice that he wanted to meet me more than he wanted to meet you.
Dash. I had mentioned I was going to be at the Varsity, and Alan came by just to meet Dash. And so that was fun. I got to tell you, today is ESG Day at ALEC. I'm going to cover the ESG movement that has crippled many companies in their vision for the future. Ron DeSantis talked about ESG yesterday. I'm going to talk about it with some of my guests from ALEC. ALEC, by the way, is that group that represents all the great ideas, the laboratory of the states, federalism. It brings all the state legislators, state officials together for a long week conference, exchanging ideas and the best practices at the state legislative level. And they've taken up the ESG movement. It was the attempt to bend corporate profits to the will of the left. Here's what Ron DeSantis said about it yesterday. Cut number seven.
We are going to do through Florida state pension system a flat ban on any type of ESG. And as you say, they like to wiggle around. It's basically a way for them to do politics. So we're going to make sure that that fiduciary duty is defined very clearly and that they stick to that. We're also want to provide protections for people in the financial marketplace from being discriminated against based on ideology. I mean, we've seen Wall Street banks discriminate against contractors who are involved in helping us against illegal immigration or against firearm manufacturers, things they don't like. So the upshot of all this, Tucker, is we want to stop these kind of masters of the universe from trying to do through economic power what they cannot achieve at the ballot box. And it's really an end run around democracy where they're trying to impose these things. And here in Florida, I want to be governed by the values of Destin, not the values of Davos.
Well said, Governor DeSantis. And when he used that phrase, masters of the universe, it throws back to Tom Wolfe's novel about the so-called masters of the universe in the 80s, Bonfire of the Vanities. The boards that employ ESG treat you like action figures. You're just to be moved around. Shareholders don't matter. What matters is appeasing the left. Speaking about appeasing the left, yesterday Joe Manchin did a double cross on Republicans this time, announcing he had reached a deal with Democrats, according to the Washington Post, to advance economic legislation that aims to lower health care costs, combat climate change, and pay down the deficit. None of that is true. It's not going to do a thing about climate change because China is digging and using more coal than ever, and it's going to not stop. It is going to adversely impact the deficit. It's going to drive inflation through the ceiling because after the CHIPS Act. Now, listen, I like the CHIPS Act, the original $72, $76 billion of CHIPS Act, the one that Micron.com, sponsor of the show. Their senior vice president Beard came on, Rob Beard, and we talked about the need for chips. We talked about, and I still believe we need semiconductor production in the United States, fabrication in the United States, more than just design in the United States. And Micron.com has been out there, as has Intel, has been all of the big fabricators pushing that message. And I agree with it. That $76 billion was a smart spend. But now, on top of the $76 billion, and Joe Manchin basically told Mitch, that's all we're going to do. Don't worry about it. So Mitch green-lighted chips, knowing that it would have some inflationary impact, but the cost of semiconductor production has to be borne because it's the national, it's like the Navy. We'd rather not have a Navy, but we need a Navy if we want to remain a great country. That's why we need the CHIPS Act. Then the day after the CHIPS Act gets through the Senate, Joe Manchin announces they've got $400 billion more of spending lined up. They got tax hikes coming. So they are actually going to spend, I think by my math, somewhere north of $600 billion in the last month of Congress, and they're going to add tax cuts. That's what the Democrats are going to run on. Inflation, more spending of money they don't have, and tax hikes. that lose trust in the British Tories for tax cuts. The Democrats in charge of the Congress are going to raise taxes. And I think it's coming right at you, you small companies. Job Creator Network alert. We'll be looking at that pretty soon. Mitch McConnell took to the floor, said this yesterday, cut 11.
Overall, the majority of Americans are concerned their paycheck can't cover the essentials amidst inflation. And a majority disapprove of what President Biden's doing about it. Clearly, something isn't adding up. But that it isn't a new feature of Washington Democrats' one-party control of government. In fact, missing the mark on economic policy has actually been a hallmark of the Biden administration.
They've been wrong every time they've opened their mouth, just literally every time. We'll get the GDP today. Two successive quarters of negative growth means a recession. At least you'll feel like a recession. Brian Westbrand on this show said yesterday, it's not technically a recession. Well, it feels like a recession to everybody else. And it used to be the technical definition of a recession. And it's going to be a recession when we run into the elections. By the way, yesterday, the Fed raised interest rates 0.75 percentage point. The Fed raised interest rates 0.75 point. More of that coming. The New York Times also reported that U.S. has proposed exchanging a Russian's arm deal for the WNBA star Brittany Griner and Paul Whelan, an American wrongly imprisoned on espionage charges, a hostage deal. Not sure that I would make that opt-ask. Robert C. O'Brien, Ambassador O'Brien, was our special envoy on hostages for a long time before he went into the job of national security advisor. I'll catch up with him later today. Here's the biggest news internationally. Russian troops will be, quote, annihilated unless they retreat from the southern city of Kherson, Ukraine warned yesterday. This morning I woke up, did the first thing I do, which is read the Financial Times and the Telegraph of Great Britain. And the Telegraph brings this word. More than 75,000 Russians have been killed or injured in the war in Ukraine so far, according to classified estimates from the Biden administration. 75,000 KIA wounded in the invasion of Ukraine. Don't feel bad for Putin. Feel bad for those soldiers who didn't even know that they were being sent to Russian. And feel really bad for Ukraine, which has been ravaged. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. The American Legislative Exchange Council gets together every year, and they bring together the smartest, the best, the brightest members of state representatives, state legislature, and state officials. I got the treasurer of Louisiana right here, John Schroeder. Now, Treasurer Schroeder, I got to warn you. I got a somewhat sketchy friend named John Schroeder. He's a little bit sketchy. He lives in California. He's moving to Tennessee.
Probably has an extra E in his name, though.
He does. He does. But he goes around Louisiana. He goes like the Commander Policy. He says, I'm John Schroeder. And they all know he's the treasurer, and he's looking for a discount. So would you put out an APB on because he's a sketchy buddy. And I know the guy, and he's a nine-fingered carpenter. That'll tell you a little bit about him. But, Schroeder is not a common name when it's got no E in it. So you ought to be able to stop this Schroeder fraud that's rampant, as far as I know.
Well, I don't take anything for free anyway. So
That's why it doesn't work for him.
I have a pretty good reputation on that.
Treasurer Schroeder, welcome. Would you give people a little bit of background on yourself before we get into ESG?
Yeah, so I'm an Army veteran. I was a CID agent, military intelligence, started out as an infantry guy and right out of college and got into narcotics work with inside that agency and was a narcotics agent. And, you know, one day I was about 29 years old, my retina hemorrhaged, and long story short, left the military, went back to Louisiana, embarked upon a business career, got involved in politics when term limits kicked in Louisiana, served in the House of Representatives for 9.5 years on an appropriations committee most of that time as a business guy, entrepreneur, had some success, ran for state treasurer when John Kennedy ran for U.S. Senate, and I'm in my fifth year as state treasurer in Louisiana.
Well, I want to talk to you about ESG, but first I got to ask you, do you think a recycled Notre Dame grad can save the Tigers? I mean, it's really not much of a way to start off the year, is it?
So don't ask a Southern Catholic boy what he thinks about Notre Dame. Now, come on, I love Notre Dame, second only to LSU. Let me tell you what I like about this coach from now our coach at LSU. You know, we tend to bring coaches in, make them great, send them to Alabama. I mean, Alabama would never win a football game if it wasn't for Nick Saban. But, I like Coach Kelly brings everything to LSU that we lack a little bit in Louisiana. That's a good morals, good ethics, good everything, good people person. When he's behind closed doors, I don't question what he's going to do.
Now, you know, Treasure, I'm from Ohio, and the only LSU game I remember is when they dismembered the Ohio State Buckeyes for the national championship. Were you?
Mm-hmm.
Let's not talk about that. Let's just go back to the Schroeder character you need to pick up. All right. I got to play for you. I want you to listen on your headphones. I know that, I asked you to arrest Dwayne earlier today, and because you got CID background, because you had your earphones hot, right?
Yep.
You sat down, you almost blew your ears out.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to play you some Ron DeSantis yesterday talking about ESG to Tucker Carlson last night. Let's play that clip. It is cut number 7.
We are going to do through Florida state pension system a flat ban on any type of ESG. And as you say, they like to wiggle around. It's basically a way for them to do politics. So yes. We're going to make sure that that fiduciary duty is defined very clearly and that they stick to that. We're also want to provide protections for people in the financial marketplace from being discriminated against based on ideology. I mean, we've seen Wall Street banks discriminate against contractors who are involved in helping us against illegal immigration or against firearm manufacturers, things they don't like. So the upshot of all this, Tucker, is we want to stop these kind of masters of the universe from trying to do through economic power what they cannot achieve at the ballot box. And it's really exactly an end run around democracy where they're trying to impose these things. And here in Florida, I want to be governed by the values of Destin, not the values of Davos.
That's a good line, Treasurer Schroeder. And I know that Alec has gathered in a lot of the conversation in the hallways about ESG. Would you explain to people what it is and what you're doing about it in Louisiana?
Yeah, so you might ask, what am I doing here as a state treasurer of Louisiana? I said this yesterday and I spoke. I'm the incoming national chairman for State Financial Officers Foundation, and it's about 25 states, treasurers, elected state auditors, and I've been a member of that since I've been state treasurer in Louisiana. This ESG thing's not new to me or Louisiana, unfortunately, and I'm going to go back 4-plus years ago when I first got elected to treasurer, when Citibank and Bank of America came after our Second Amendment rights, if you remember that. And I remember getting a letter from John Kennedy. He was, not even senator for a year. I'm not treasurer for 6 months. And Citibank came out with policies that I thought infringed upon my Second Amendment rights. I didn't even get past me, much less the next person, where they were going to tell a 21-year-old, you had to be 21 to be licensed to carry. Well, I told you early, I'm a military veteran. I said, oh, hell no. Uh-uh. When you look at the military age of the average soldier in this country and what where they are today while we're sitting here on this radio, they're all under 21. I went in as a 21-year-old, and I was like the old man of the group.
Yeah.
So I wound up blocking Citibank and Bank of America from a $600 million deal, debt or bond deal in Louisiana. That was 4 years ago. And here I am yesterday and Alec in a packed room of people were talking about ESG. And I told them, I do believe it's been the state treasurers of this country, at least the conservative ones, have taken this fight to corporate America, not the U.S. government. And as an Army veteran, man, that's offensive to me that I have to go fight against corporate America infringing upon your rights and my rights, trying to force, especially the small southern states. They're coming at us big time, you. And it's a roundabout way.
Treasurer, let's slow this down for the Pittsburgh Steelers fan and USC Trojans out there. ESG stands for Environmental, Social, Governmental.
Correct.
And it's policies that corporations put in place that say, we're not going to harm the environment. We're not going to invest in socially left-wing antitheses. And the governmental processes of these organizations, we're going to reform ourselves that we are in step with the woke left. It's just woke. ESG is short for woke.
So what we're doing right now, and I praised Alec yesterday because a year ago, nobody even was talking about this yet. And those, treasurers have different financial obligations across the country. I handle all debt for the state. I invest billions of dollars in trust funds. So I started with what I can do and what I can control. And I started, and I'm gonna say this on your radio show this morning. I have not said this publicly anywhere. We've been working on moving $600 million out of BlackRock because as much as they want to infringe upon Louisiana, what they want Louisiana to do, why shouldn't Louisiana have the same right to pick and choose who we do business with? And look, I've been drugged through court that I can't do this, I can't do that. This coin is single-sided, and I don't like it. And as this ESG thing grows, it's good to see legislators and treasurers sitting in the same room yesterday talking, how are we going to fight against this? Because it's typically, when you look at the makeup of ALEC and you look at the makeup of the SOF membership, you know, it's not New York, it's not New Jersey, it's not California, it's not where all the number and masses are. So they want to stuff this stuff right down our throats.
Not on the coast. It's Iowa and Ohio, yeah. It's Louisiana and Mississippi. Yeah, it's Mississippi, everybody in between.
Everybody.
We let people in from Michigan, sadly, but nevertheless, we let them in.
So, it's an everyday fight, but, you know, unfortunately, you have to it's like eating an elephant. You know, you got to do it one bite.
What has BlackRock done that's got you upset? If they're investing in China, they don't care about the Uyghurs.
No,
they don't care. There are a million Uyghurs in a concentration camp right now.
Let me tell you what's happening. And it was really, in my opinion, a Russian war that really woke up people like me because it exposed us to the information where our money was being invested. So when you look, you and I are sitting here talking about ESG this morning, I promise you, we are probably one of maybe five people talking about it right now.
I know. Ron DeSantis on Tucker Carlson last night gets hero points for bringing up values of Destin, not Davos.
Right. So, you know, what I've spent, when we just finished our legislative session in June, we had several bills that couldn't even make it out of committee because it's sort of like tinfoil kind of thing right now. But I'm here to tell you it's not. I'm not a tinfoil guy, but we are under assault by corporate America. So what I want to do is expose what the problem is. And I had a bill. Not I, but obviously I can't pass a bill in the Louisiana legislature, but I had a legislator run a bill that would simply expose how much money, and not to jump around, I could talk about a million things, but this is really about our retirement funds.
Yes.
You know, you go on and on. Florida, Texas have massive retirement funds. I mean, in Louisiana, we're about $68, $69 billion. Florida has that in two counties.
But you got to invest that to make sure you can cash the checks that you've written.
Right.
Those retirees get their money.
But in Louisiana, our retirement systems are all run independently. In North Carolina, that treasurer runs the entire retirement system. But I got 13 individual systems that are run by 13 boards, 13 executive directors, 13 fund managers. So what I'm trying to do is expose the retirees to the information. Like, hey, because remember now, these are retired police officers, school teachers, bus drivers, firefighters. Hey, Mr. Firefighter, look where your money's invested. So I had legislation, and I went around it a different way because I couldn't get it out of committee. How much money's invested inside Louisiana? How much is invested inside the United States? And how much is outside the United States? And all that data is coming in right now. And what I have seen so far, it's really sad. And what I've told people around Louisiana the last 30 days, if we don't invest in Louisiana, you think any of these corporate liberal companies are going to come to our aid? You can forget that.
Well, they're trying to kill the oil and gas industry, and
absolutely.
I believe Louisiana has a certain investment in oil and gas exploration, correct?
It's absolutely. But, you know, when I tell people this, I want business. I want entrepreneurs to solve our problems and get us into the next century, not government. You know, government doesn't do anything well except run the military. And I can say that as somebody who's 61 years old. I know I look younger.
You do.
The military does it right. They know how to manage people. They know how to enforce laws. the government could take a real lesson from the military.
Well, you know, I got a son-in-law, and nephew on active duty, so I know you're right. And they're better every day they're in the U.S. military because they learn more every day. And they get up on time, they show up on time, and they get yelled at when they get yelled at. You know, that's what I say.
I sort of learned this phrase from the military. I get up every morning, put my shoes and socks on, I go make a living. You know,
so when you get back to your legislature, we got about a minute left. Yeah. Treasurer Schroeder, again, LSU grad. We're going to forgive him everything. He's Army, not Navy. He's all the wrong stuff, but he's doing the right thing on ESG. Did the members of ALEC take to this message? Are they clued in now that the environmental, social, governmental effort to change the way that America invests is fundamentally corrupt and wrong and political?
Yeah. It's one thing to first you have to recognize you have a problem, but what are we going to do when Louisiana, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, when the big banks don't want to do business with us? So we have some work to do and figure out how do we fix it?
We're going to find a bank that takes care of you folks.
Exactly.
John Schroeder, Treasurer of Louisiana, thank you for joining me. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back from ALEC. America, I got to follow the Treasurer of Louisiana with Andy Puzner. Andy has been my pal for 20 years, and he would have made a great Secretary of Labor, but, of course, he got sabotaged, as many of the Trump appointees did, but he never gave up. Keeps writing the Wall Street Journal. I read it every time. Andy is a Browns fan as well. Andy, how are you? It's good to see you.
Great, Hugh. Good to be here with you. Good to see you.
Andy, you fought the fight. We are now in an inflationary spiral. It's got recession impacts. The GDP is contracting two quarters in a row. And last night, Democrats announced they're going to spend another $600 billion in the reconciliation and raise corporate taxes on so-called super wealthy people. What do you make of that? Are they out of their minds?
Yes. Okay. You have to be out of your mind. Look, if the Fed is increasing interest rates to try and slow the economy down, to try and drive demand down so it can meet supply, If they're doing everything they can to slow the economy because you spent too much money. We spent that $1.9 trillion in March of 2021 after the recession, after the pandemic had ended. We spent another $2 trillion. If the problem is we spent too much money and the Fed's trying to tamp down the demand that created, what sense does it make to spend another, half a trillion dollars? It makes absolutely no sense. You're acting directly conversely to what the Fed is trying to accomplish. It's just nonsense.
Andy, last night, Lee and Garrett, and yesterday, Dwayne and I were coming back from lunch in an Uber driven by Ali. And Ali's a great black guy who's getting on my case. He's seen me on MSNBC and NBC, and I don't think he watches Fox. And Ali says, do you really think Joe Biden caused this inflation? I said, they spent $2 trillion that we didn't need to spend. Of course they did. And then they added on the infrastructure bill, not to do it. Of course they caused inflation. I don't know who they want to blame Putin. What do you think of that argument?
Well, it's the argument that Biden didn't cause this is ridiculous. Larry Summers came out, who is Larry Summers isn't like some far right Republican. He's not going to be having lunch with Hugh and Andy. This is a guy from Harvard who was Secretary of Treasury under Clinton. He ran the Council of Economic Advisors for President Obama. He came out before they passed this $1.9 trillion bill and said, do not pass this bill. He came out in the Washington Post with an article that said this will ignite inflation. You're going to end up with hyperinflation if you pass that. They passed it and it ignited hyperinflation. Jason Furman, another leftist economist, said the same thing. Steve Rattner, who was an Obama economist, said the same thing. Do not do this spending bill. They did it anyway. It ignited inflation and it caused the current problems we're having. Look, if demand is way up and the Fed's trying to bring demand down, don't spend money. What you could do to support the Fed's efforts is try and increase supply.
Yeah.
Because if supply and demand meet, it doesn't matter how high demand is. If we have enough supply to meet it, there's no inflation. That was the case under President Trump. Plenty of supply, plenty of demand. Now we've got this excessive demand and limited supply. Encourage the supply side. Reduce regulation so businesses want to produce.
This is the key. This is the key.
Make the tax cuts permanent. Don't impose new taxes like they've done now, like they're trying to do yesterday. Don't impose new taxes. Make the tax cuts permanent and focus on domestic energy production. You do those three things will increase supply while demand is coming down. The pain from decreasing demand falls on the people that are creating demand. Right. Because you're trying to limit what they can do. That's consumers. That's us.
That's us.
That's the pain. So increase supply. That doesn't hurt anybody.
I saw you on the ALEC roster. I said, this is good. And he will tell the American Legislative Exchange Council exactly what they need to hear. What did you tell him? Or have you spoken yet? You speaking today? Or
It's today. It's I speak after breakfast. I think Vivek's going to speak first, and then I'm going to be after him on a panel with Steve Moore.
And Steve Moore's coming in a little bit. What are you going to tell him? What's your number one takeaway? Because he's a state legislator. They can do stuff.
I think the if they want to talk about the economy, I'm going to be saying the kinds of things I was saying to you. I think my big pitch is going to be on ESG investing, which is environmental, social, and governance investing. They need to act because I think it's the greatest threat to our democracy, our economic freedom, and our individual liberty in my lifetime. And that includes the threat of communism. This is an internal threat. You know, Lincoln always said, external threats we can deal with.
Yeah, ESG is how a Steelers fan spells woke.
Yeah,
that's how I explain it to people. Yeah, ESG just means woke, and they're making corporations do woke things, and it's killing shareholder value.
Right, it's an attempt to reorient modern corporations so that rather than focusing on returns for shareholders, they're going to be focused on executing this liberal agenda, this woke agenda. And it'll destroy our economic freedom. It'll destroy our democracy. And it hurts us individually because they use our money to do it. It's these large investment firms that handle all of our investments in mutual funds, 401ks, pension funds. And they weaponize our money to hurt us. So we're not getting returns. We're actually funding Black Lives Matter. We're defunding the police.
We're doing the Green New Deal, which is a way to lose money. We got 1 minute, Andy.
Sure.
When you tell these ALEC gather, what law should they pass? What should they do to stop ESG, which is woke economics?
Well, I've been working with Heritage and ALEC. We came up with a bill. It's a state fiduciary duty bill.
Oh, cool.
It copies ERISA and says if you invest for political reasons, you're violating your fiduciary duties. And we do have a number of states interested, and I want to gin up support for that. It's an important bill, and we can start to fight before 2024. This is something we can start fighting now.
Fight ESG now. Andy Pesner, you're a great guy. You'll get them charged up. You're one of the best public speakers in America. If you need a speaker, call up. Who does your speaking?
Jeannie Hoffa with PR. Does my PR.
Is it Washington Speakers Bureau? Is it?
No, it's Coast PR, Coast Public Relations.
All right, go get Andy because he's best keynote speaker in America. Andy Pesner, good to see you. ALEC continues in hour number two here on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. America, bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia, from the American Legislative Exchange Council annual gathering of state legislators, state officials. President Biden is going to be talking with Xi Jinping, the president of China, today. I'm a little bit worried by the end that Texas will have been given to China in exchange for, I don't know, whatever they want to give us, because, you know, he's not the world's greatest negotiator. I'm beginning this hour focused on education. State Senator Patricia Rucker is with me in the studio in Atlanta. She represents the 16th District in West Virginia. Patricia Rucker, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Thank you so much. I'm honored.
Can you start by giving people a little bit of bio about yourself? Because I found your backstory is fascinating.
Well, I am a first-generation immigrant to the United States of America. Came when I was 6 years old from Venezuela with my parents and my brothers. And we grew up in Montgomery County, Maryland, while my father worked in Washington, D.C. In, I guess when you could say when I grew up, I fell in love, decided to marry an American. We had five children and moved to West Virginia in the year 2000 in order to be able to afford me staying at home so I could raise them. The farthest thing from my mind was to get involved in politics. But after seeing what happened to Venezuela and then seeing what was happening in the United States of America, I decided to get involved in local politics to, you know, try to protect the constitutional rights that I saw slipping away and to help it like good people to represent me. And then came the day when I decided to put my name in because no one would challenge my local elected representative, who was just the opposite in every opinion that I have politically. And I did a lot of door knocking, and I was able to defeat him and get elected.
So, Senator Rucker, that's an amazing story. From Venezuela to the state senate of West Virginia, beating an incumbent Democrat to get there. Now, what I got to ask you, though, like me, you're a Roman Catholic. And like me, you know, Shelley Moore Capito is a great senator. And Joe Manchin until yesterday was holding the line, and then Joe caved last night. Are you surprised that he caved? I mean, tax hikes as a recession comes in. What do West Virginians think about that?
I cannot imagine that there would be any positive reaction. It is just absolutely inconceivable.
And they're going to spend billions and billions and billions more in an inflationary time on green stuff that Joe said he wouldn't do.
It just doesn't make sense. And especially for West Virginia, we are a state that, like it or not, has a lot of fossil fuels. And it is one of the main drivers of our economy. We are diversifying, but it is still a super good paying job for the state of West Virginia. And you take the fact that they're trying to destroy that. And then you raise taxes on people who are mostly very humble, very low means, very rural. Where is it going to come from?
Where it's going to come from is out of all of our hides. Now, Senator, I want to talk about it. I'm parochial school educated. I don't know if you had the benefit of going to Roman Catholic schools, but everyone that has education reform is near and dear to my heart because the public schools that my children went to are not the public schools that are available generally in the United States. In Southern California, at the time that they went, they were, you know, I'm older than you, so they were older than your kids. They went to great public schools, but things have fallen on hard times everywhere. What education reform is West Virginia doing? Because I know education reform is one of the hot topics here at the ALEC gathering.
Yes, it definitely is. And I agree with you. I actually feel I had a very good public school education in Montgomery County, Maryland in the 80s where I was growing up. But it's not the same now. And a lot of parents, unfortunately, are unhappy with what is available to their children. So education choice, which is, you know, some people call it school choice, but giving options to parents is a huge thing right now, because for those who want something different, they want to be able to use their tax dollars to help them get something different for their children. And especially in this difficult time, we've had COVID. We've had some policies that have caused parents to get very upset at school, college.
Masking closures, remote learning when there
just
shouldn't be.
Just a lot unions. Of things. I mean, some parents are upset about curriculum and things that are being pushed on their kids that they don't agree with. I mean, there's a long list. But at the end of the day, it's about, do those dollars belong to that student, to educate that student, or does it belong to a system? And there are many like myself who believe that it belongs to the student.
Yeah, the idea that divisive issues are taught, it makes no sense. Whether it's on sexuality, whether it's on race, division should not be sowed among our students. And it wasn't in the Catholic school. We had the colors of the rainbow in my school, and it just was never, I mean, you had to know your Baltimore Catechism, but you were not divided. What did West Virginia do? What is it trying to do in education reform?
So West Virginia has been very late to the discussion of reform of education and school choice. So until I was education chair 3 years ago, there was zero, absolutely zero. So we had this little thing called a teacher strike. You may have heard of it. And that was because we proposed a bill that would introduce just the tiniest bit of school choice, open enrollment, charter schools, and a very small limited ESA.
Explain ESA for Education Savings Account.
Exactly.
Right?
Education Savings Account, which is where the money goes into an account that the parent can, you know, basically use to educate the child. It is the freest of all the school choice because it can be used anywhere. So that little bill caused a teacher strike, and it was really sad. It died during the legislative session, but the governor still wanted us to give the teachers the raise that he had promised them. And we in the Senate said, nope, they killed that bill. If we don't get school choice, we're not giving them a raise. And we held firm so that at the end of the session, he agreed to our terms, which was to have a special session just for school choice. And at that special session, we finally got charter schools and open enrollment, but the education savings account did not survive. And when it didn't survive, I threw the gauntlet down. I said, well, they better get me out of office, because if I get reelected in 2020, I will make certain I introduce the most broad education savings account possible. And sure enough, they did everything they could.
I bet you the teachers union did everything in California. You'd have walked around and your face would have been on billboards. Stop this killer of education. You know, they would have called you every name in the book.
There was a very significant amount of money spent against me and ads, and no one had seen that kind of mailers in my district for a very long time, but I succeeded. In...
You seem awfully nice. I don't know how they can turn you into a demon.
They really tried. They really tried.
Mother of five, stayed home when the kids were growing, were young, yeah. Catholic, Latin mass attender. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they're going to be able to turn you into a Beelzebub.
Well, despite their attempt, I definitely succeeded. And sure enough, we introduced what at the time was the broadest, most universal education savings account in the United States, and we passed it.
So what does a parent get to do now? Do they get that tax credit for saving into the ESA? Do they just get to save tax-free? What is it?
It was just an education savings account. So 100% of the state aid average of the money that we spend for a student will go into an account for that child.
Well, that is the Arizona plan. It's the same thing. The dollars follow the child.
Arizona basically took our idea and made it even better.
Well, because they didn't tell anyone that it was your idea. I'm glad you're here.
It's totally okay. So that idea that that you're not going to just select one said population. All education savings account before West Virginia's was just for kids with disabilities or special needs or victims of bullying or for certain districts. So, you know,
failing schools.
Yeah. Yes. So I basically took that wonderful idea that I, you know, also like I learned from Indiana and Arizona and Florida and, but said, why would we discriminate? Why would we pick and choose who gets? Just offer it to all. Those who need it will take advantage of it. Those who are happy in their public school are going to be happy. They're going to stay.
When does it kick in?
So it kicked in July 1st of this year, but we did have a court challenge because, you know, when they don't get what they want.
They sue.
So a judge a few weeks ago did put an injunction on it. And we are appealing it.
And they say it's Establishment Clause violation, which is just wrong.
Well, so they are challenging, saying that it's against the West Virginia Constitution. And they also challenged it on it's going to hurt the public schools.
You know, you're going to win. And then how much money will follow the student in West Virginia?
So roughly around $3,700 per year.
So they're just afraid of giving each parent enough to go to a private school or a Catholic school or a... It can be a sectarian or a secular private school, right?
Exactly.
It's been upheld by the Supreme Court forever.
We're not telling them what to do.
That's against the Establishment Clause, by the way, if they strike that down. Senator Rucker, congratulations. Go forth and preach. Preach it, because we need that in every state. ESA's in every state. Thank you, Senator Rucker. Coming right back, America, from ALEC in Atlanta. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt from the ALEC Conference, American Legislative Exchange Council in Hotlanta. Old friend, Steve Moore. I call him Stephen Moore. He says, just call me Steve. Like for the thousandth time in a row, I've done that. But Steve Moore has been coming on my radio show I've been doing this since 1990. I've been doing this show since 2000. And Steve Moore has probably shown up here at least as often as any other economist not named Westbury. Steve Moore, you and Brian like are the lonely two economists who know what happens when Joe Manchin folds and they pass a reconciliation bill. What is going to be the consequence of this bill?
So, I couldn't even sleep last night. I was just so angry about what has happened in the last 48 hours, Hugh. So let's back up for a minute. So today we will get that GDP number in about an hour for the second quarter. It's likely to be negative. It might be slightly positive, but it's probably going to be negative. And so we will have two straight quarters of negative growth, a contraction of the economy. But I've been saying that this is not a GDP recession. It's a cost of living recession. So that is to say that Americans are just getting poorer month after
they
month.
They feel after a recession.
Oh, you better believe it. You know, when you have 82% of Americans who say the economy's in the wrong direction, I'd say that's a recession. Those are worse than Jimmy Carter numbers, by
the
way.
And the interest rates are going to catch up to Volcker rates pretty soon, right? They have to.
Well, you know, we got 75 basis point, you know, increase yesterday. But Wall Street went on a big, big buying spree yesterday because Wall Street is addicted to these low interest rates. And they think that the chairman, Jerome Powell, is actually going to stop cutting rates pretty soon. But here is the point I want to make that loud and clear to your audience. The match that lit the forest fire of this massive inflation we're in right now. Don't forget, when Trump left office, we were at 1.5%. Now we're at 9.1%.
After all that COVID spending
exactly.
that he did.
Exactly. So we have 1.5% inflation. 18 months later, we're at 9.1%. It was the massive trillions and trillions of dollars of spending. By the way, the month that Trump left office, he passed a $1 trillion COVID bill. Then Biden comes in, 1.8 trillion plus another 1.1 trillion. And that, look, it's so simple.
Okay,
if you're going to put that much money in the economy, you're going to have inflation.
I get in an Uber car today with Dwayne. We've been down to the Varsity, great spot in Atlanta. And Ali is driving, and he lets me sit in the front seat, gives me a lecture about how I'm not supposed to sit in the front seat, but he's a wonderful guy. We have a great time. He's a leftist, a black guy, watches me when I was on MSNBC and checked out. Yeah. He says, do you blame Biden for inflation? I said, yes, I do. He said, that's just crazy. Trump had no problem. I said, no, what did he do? I said, he spent all that money. It's not really rocket science. Everyone should understand if you print that much money, and now they're going to do what? Between chips and reconciliation, another $600 billion?
So we should be, our agenda in Washington should be to be very aggressively cutting government spending. COVID is over. Incidentally, there's no reason we should be talking about a recession right now. Right. I mean, my God, COVID is over. Businesses are reopened. People are going to restaurants and movies. And if Trump were president today, in my opinion, we'd be seeing, you know, tremendous growth. But when the Congress is talking about spending another $1 trillion, I mean, that is dousing a forest fire with kerosene.
And what about the 15% international rate of corporate tax? That's just a hit on shareholder value. The market will react.
It sure is. And it's going to kill American companies. It's going to lead to, you were saying this off the air. You're so right. Capital moves freely and it moves to lower tax places. That's why people move to Florida. That's why people move to Texas, because they don't have an income tax. So they want, plus they want another roughly $50 billion for the Department of Energy. Yeah, we shouldn't even have a Department of Energy. I mean, my God, we keep that. This is money that is going to be used for the Green New Deal. They are assaulting our, look, we get 70% of our energy today from old fashioned coal, oil, and gas. The idea that somehow we're going to transition to zero fossil fuels.
You know why Liz Truss is winning in England? Is that she's embraced Thatcherism.
Exactly. And it's finally, we have somebody, because where's the leadership in the world? I mean, we don't have leadership in the United States. You don't have leadership in any of these European countries. And anyway, so I find it so troubling. And we need all hands on deck here, folks. We need to stop this bill. I don't think this train has left the station yet.
Well, House Democrats will get crushed. They're already going to get crushed.
Yeah.
But they've thrown them. They're the most unhappy people. They got to vote for tax hikes and more spending that no one will get.
That's
right. This is not money to the people. This is not COVID dollars to keep businesses open. This is just going to special interests.
That's right.
On top of special
interests. Exactly.
And the taxes are going to hurt jobs. And so Democrats in the House have a tough vote.
And you know what? That's why they know that this is their last hurrah.
Yes.
They know that window is slamming shut. So Nancy Pelosi is trying to get every bill possible, you know, through to advance this left-wing big government socialism.
But they're throwing
agenda.
Democrats off the boat. I mean, the marginal district, the people that might have won by a half point or 1 point, they're going overboard. If they're a Democrat, they should vote against this bill.
Yes, but unfortunately, it looks like very few will.
You think Kelly will in Arizona? Arizona, they can't have Intel leave. They can't have these people leave because of a 15% international corporate tax on people.
I mean, look, there is a mentality that they're going to hang together or hang separately. And so, you know, when Joe Manchin threw in the towel yesterday, and I don't understand Joe Manchin. I mean, this is a state in West Virginia that went 70% for
Donald
Trump.
We just had State Senator Patricia Roberts, and she said that.
Yeah. I mean, that is the most unpopular thing. It is a coal producing and a gas producing state, and he wants to give $50 billion to destroy those industries?
Yeah. Let me play for you Ron DeSantis yesterday, Stephen Moore. Governor DeSantis was talking about another topic on the agenda today here at ALEC, ESG. All right. Cue cut 7.
We are going to do through Florida state pension system a flat ban on any type of ESG. And as you say, they like to wiggle around. It's basically a way for them to do politics. So we're going to make sure that fiduciary duty is defined very clearly and that they stick to that. We're also want to provide protections for people in the financial marketplace from being discriminated against based on ideology. I mean, we've seen Wall Street banks discriminate against contractors who are involved in helping us against illegal immigration or against firearm manufacturers, things they don't like. So the upshot of all this, Tucker, is we want to stop these kind of masters of the universe from trying to do through economic power what they cannot achieve at the ballot box. And it's really exactly. an end run around democracy where they're trying to impose these things. And here in Florida, I want to be governed by the values of Destin, not the values of Davos.
Stephen Moore, what do you think?
What a great line. I mean, what a great communicator that governor is. Yeah. I love Ron DeSantis. He's spot on correct. I would just add one thing to what he just said. Emphasize it is a breach of the fiduciary duty of these people who run these pension funds to basically be not investing in things that are actually, you know, the pension fund so you can provide a good return for the retirees. Yeah. And by doing this, every study shows that all this ESG investing actually reduces the return. So yeah, the people are getting screwed out of working
mutual
people.
Funds in Amazon because yeah. I'm not a master of the universe. That's a term borrowed from Tom Wolfe's Bonfire of
yes.
the Humanities. And I'm not a master of the universe. I let other masters of the universe invest my money, right. but I don't want them investing for green purposes to advance the cause of abortion providers to do woke ideology. I want them to make a return
exactly.
on my money.
Exactly.
Because I'm not going to do this forever, right? I'm going to do this for another 6 years, maybe a little bit longer if Phil Boyce breaks my arm. But I'm going to eventually retire and they can't squander my money.
Yeah. Well, you know, the three stocks over the last year that have had the highest return of the Fortune 50 companies are Chevron, Exxon, and the third one is a big energy company as well. And these ESG companies are not investing in those.
I didn't know that. Steve, I want people to know. I get two things in the morning, Punch Bowl News, and I get News Items by John Ellis. I subscribe to News Items by John Ellis. I would invest in News Items by John Ellis because I can't trust the news media anymore. You've got something that goes out every morning. How do people get that, or can they get that?
We call it our hotline, and Hugh, I want to make sure you're getting every morning. By the way, you can read this in 5 minutes.
That's what I need.
That's usually
all the show prep join gives me
exactly.
in 5 minutes.
It's you know, just three or four bullet items on what's going on with the economy. Newt Gingrich told me yesterday, he said, literally, it's the first thing he reads every morning, other than the Wall Street Journal.
Is
true.
Newt an alien? Because he's the same Newt Gingrich as 1994. I mean, he's got the same energy. He's like Don Brennan in California. I just wonder, is he taking like some super Vitamix every day? Because he's amazing.
he's a brilliant man. And anyway, so anybody who'd like to get the hotline. And by the way, unlike the Build Back Better bill, this really is free. It costs you nothing. You just have to go to our website, Committee to Unleash Prosperity, and give us your email and we'll get it to you.
You're talking to legislators today.
Incidentally, that report, did you see that report we put out last week that showed that the Biden, that we looked at the top 75 people in the Biden administration who deal with the economy, either people in commerce and transportation, in finance issues, blah, 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 starting from the top. And we found that the most of the people who are dealing with the economy under Joe Biden have zero business experience. Zero. And by the way, Hugh, I'm not saying they didn't run a business. I'm saying they didn't even work for a business. They didn't even work for a lemonade stand.
Oh, they're running. They're woke activists. Yeah. I got to get this in question. We got Speaker Designate Perez sitting here.
Yeah.
There are some states that have gained themselves an advantage. Florida, Tennessee, Texas, Arizona. But their advantage, they're all in. They're, you know, no income tax.
Yeah.
What do they do to stay competitive against people who are hopefully, like Arizona moved to a 2.5%, not as good as zero.
Yep.
What do the states do that have already done everything they can for taxpayers?
Well, you have to stay competitive. You know, the key indicators, by the way, this is Alec. We do this report every year called Rich States, Poor States.
Right.
And we rank the states, and the states at the top always are Florida and Texas and Tennessee. By the way, Idaho is a good state.
Utah.
Iowa. By the way, keep your eye on Kim Reynolds, the governor of Iowa. She is a superstar. You mentioned Margaret Thatcher. I think Kim Reynolds is going to be our Margaret Thatcher. So anyway, we've got a lot of great governors. You got to keep your taxes low. You've got to be a right to work state. If you're in California, you force
you. Screw it. Look, I left California. I'm in Virginia now, and I hope Glenn Youngkin puts in right to work. I think they have right to work in Virginia. I hope he cuts taxes.
He's going to keep it there. So it's not complicated. Keep your government spending down. You've got to make sure that you're not growing your bureaucracy.
How about education choice? I think
that is the biggest one. Thank you for mentioning that. I think this is I've been saying this for the last 6 months. This is the school choice moment. The people, for the first time during COVID, got to look over the shoulder of their kids and see what the kids were learning, the crap. The fact that we had all these states that shut down their schools. For rich people, they were able to send their kids to schools. I've got to say this. I think the biggest policy catastrophe of my lifetime was shutting down our schools in this country, which was devastating to the kids, and it had zero positive health effects. And the only reason we did it was because of the political might and muscle of the teachers' unions. We don't care about kids. They care.
Yeah, you got to go live in Arizona, Steve, because they've passed the best school choice bill in the country. And the
it's between Arizona and Florida, right? Arizona and Florida.
Well, I don't know. Arizona does 100% backpack. Ohio's going to do 100% backpack. That means the money follows the student. And the teachers' unions are putting it on the ballot. And we're going to spend every day, if we have to, talking about to vote no on that initiative. Because they want to revoke the freedom of parents. And that is, you know, the productivity comes from individuals, right? And that and you're the original prophet of productivity. Mm-hmm. We don't turn this economy around unless we get better productivity.
You know, why are we churning out kids, you know, with these crazy left-wing ideas? Why does AOC spout these crazy ideas? She has been indoctrinated with these crazy ideas since she was in kindergarten. I mean, we cannot allow this to happen for one more day. I mean, by the way, 25% of our kids now in high school, only 25% of our kids are required to take an American history class.
And those American history classes are
probably terrible anyway, right?
Steve Moore, thank you. Thank you. I'll get the web. I'll look forward to the newsletter every morning. I appreciate your being here. Okay. Go preach to the ALEC folk. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, broadcasting from the American Legislative Exchange Council. He was so great yesterday. Danny Perez is back, the speaker designated of the Florida House. You just heard Steve Moore say that, you know, Arizona had the best, but Florida's doing okay on education. Speaker designated Perez, what do you think?
So, Hugh, once again, thank you for having me. But I've been told that your Spanish listening population is increasing. So I'm going to throw a curveball here.
All right.
And I want to explain to some of our viewers about, some of our listeners about exactly how school choice is moving in Florida. Nosotros en el estado de la Florida creemos que los padres tienen que hacer las decisiones correctas de parte de sus niños. Cuando ellos están escogiendo a qué escuela tienen que ir los niños, tienen que tener todas las opciones. Los fondos escolares, los fondos educacionales de los niños tiene que ir con el niño. Y por eso ellos tienen, razonablemente, tienen la opción de recoger a qué escuela ellos quieren ir, a qué escuela los padres quieren mandar los niños. And so, Hugh, that's exactly what we're doing.
I know, I understand. That's children. You said Ninos four children. Times, so I got that part.
I said, here we're doing. In the state of Florida, parents have the right to choose where their children want to go. Do you know the greatest problem we're having in Florida, Hugh? The greatest problem we're having is school choice exists, the funds are sitting in a pot, and we cannot convince parents enough. We're convincing them, but not enough, that the school choice route, the traditional public school system, although it's still working, the charter schools are sometimes a better option. And so we have funds that are sitting there just waiting for parents to take that voucher and put them in a private school, put them in a charter school. And that's the struggle we're having. But the funds are there. We're moving, just not fast enough.
Did they keep the Catholic schools open? My Catholic high school is still open, barely. But a lot of the parochial schools in Ohio closed. Are the Catholic schools in Florida still going?
The Catholic schools are open. And the truth is, in Florida, DeSantis kept all schools open. And we were able to pass in Florida, through executive order under the governor, a mandate to not allow the masks in some of these schools. I mean, I have a two-year-old. And at some point, a two-year-old was wearing a mask. He can barely eat his Cheerios in the morning without throwing them against the ceiling. So, you know, I think in Florida we've been a little bit different, but I'll take it.
Danny Perez, let's turn to ESG. Yesterday or this week, you told me the governor did something about investing in Cuba, because Biden wants people to invest in Cuba, not in America, in Cuba. What did the governor say?
A couple days ago, the governor sent out a memo reminding Floridians that there is no such thing as a free market in Cuba. The Cuban regime, and I hate calling them a government because they're not a government. They're a dictatorship. They're a regime. Cuban regime, the communist regime, the what we call in Miami the castristas, and that is the government of the Castros. What they're doing is they're asking for investment from Floridians to boost their private sector. Their pitch is the following. We have Jose in Cuba who has opened up a restaurant in his own home. Entrepreneurial spirit. We want you to invest in his business. It sounds great on paper. It is not reality. It will never be reality as long as the Castristas are in charge in Cuba. Here's why. It's similar to Venezuela. In order for them to have a private sector business in Cuba, they have to go through the communist arm of business prosperity. That's how they call it in Cuba. They eat the profit. The homeowner, which doesn't exist because there is no such thing as private property rights in Cuba, but the homeowner in their eyes that's opening this restaurant, he ain't getting the money. He got to give it to the government. So it's a fallacy. And the governor, Governor Ron DeSantis, who has been a phenomenal advocate for a free Cuba, he understands our issue, told the Floridians, don't fall for that trick. Don't fall for that foolery. The money's not going to the people. There is no such thing as private businesses or private enterprise in Cuba.
Phenomenal. I hope you're out there talking to the ALEC membership about ESG because it's a nightmare. Let me ask you a last thing. I don't know if Governor DeSantis has already signed you up for his future campaign for president, which he disavows, but it's going to happen. If he runs, are you going to be with him?
Well, look, here's a good thing. Right now, it looks like it's going to be a Florida guy no matter what.
You're right. You're right.
I'm America first, but I put a slash next to it. I'm Florida first as well. And so we're lucky in Florida. We have great advocates. One thing that we do is we spend time as a conservative movement in Florida to work on grassroots. And so we are kind of always moving the needle from the bottom up. And that's how you end up with the situation we're at, where we have multiple great leaders in Florida. I'm excited to see what happens. Get your popcorn ready, as Terrell Owens would say.
When does the Florida primary happen? Is it right after South Carolina?
I believe it's right after South Carolina. I think we're, I want to say maybe the fourth or fifth state.
But so you become speaker in 2025, but you're officially speaker designate before that. So people will be looking for you and your endorsement. I know you'll keep your powder dry, but I bet you Ron DeSantis is counting on you. In terms of other candidates who want to campaign down there, should they come to Miami? Will Miami welcome every presidential candidate who wants to come there?
Not should they, you. They have to come to Miami. Not because Miami is a big city, not because the population is large, but the climate has changed. We lost the mayor's race in Miami-Dade County by 7 points. Steve Bobo was our candidate, Republican candidate, Trump-endorsed candidate. He lost by 7 points. I would be willing to bet you the Cheerios my son had this morning, +5, that if that race happened today, Steve Bobo would be the Republican mayor of Miami-Dade County. The climate has absolutely changed. People aren't falling for the old tricks. They're not.
Well, I think this bill that they're passing overnight, from the last time I talked to you, the Democrats are raising taxes and spending $600 billion more on their friends. Not on Floridians, not on Ohioans, not on Virginians, not on Mainers. They're spending it on their friends. I mean, I hope it changes faster.
Look, locally, they just released the budget for Miami-Dade County yesterday. $10 billion, largest budget ever. Largest budget ever. So it's not going back to the people. They're not cutting taxes and putting it back in your pocket. They're spending it. So let's see. I'm excited to see what happens to you. But I will tell you this. The conservative movement isn't going anywhere. We're only growing.
Danny Perez, what's your Twitter handle?
Daniel_Perez FL.
Daniel_Perez FL. Thank you. I'll be right back. Hour 3 ahead on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Nothing pre-recorded today. I'm in Atlanta at the American Legislative Exchange Council. I hope you're watching on the Salem News Channel because Senator Phil King is a Texan. And we've been talking off air, so I've got the rundown on my old buddy Will Hartnett. I've got a lot of background information, but I want to dive right in. State Senator, welcome. Tell people where your district is, Senator King.
Well, picture Dallas-Fort Worth and go west about 165 miles. I cover that territory.
Okay, so that's a lot of driving. You've been reelected for a long time in the House. When did you start in the state Senate?
I started in state Senate in January. Been in the House for 24 years.
All right, so you know about what you are. You're a lawyer as well. You're a builder as well. I want to talk to you about crime and Soros DA.
I'm not a criminal, by the way.
You're not a criminal, Dwayne? I'm not sure. Never mind. I want to play for you Tom Cotton yesterday at the Senate press conference talking about this issue. Senator Cotton, please.
We are rapidly returning to a world of broken windows, chaos, and rampant crime that we worked so hard to leave behind 30 years ago. The reason for this crime wave is simple. The Democratic Party cares more about criminals than it does about victims. Today's Democrats want to defund, disarm, and demonize our police. They elect extreme Soros prosecutors who refuse to enforce the law as it's written. And they've abolished bail in some places.
Senator King, what do you make of Senator Cotton's comments?
Well, he's right on. And the interesting thing is, it's not a complex problem. I was a cop for 15 years in Fort Worth. I was a reserve for another 20 years in another city. We know what reduces crime. We had terrible crime rates in the 80s. We came in. We supported our police. We put money into law enforcement. We locked up the bad guys. We identified who were the serious criminals and who were the ones that we had a good chance of rehabilitating, property crimes, things like that. We kept the bad guys in jail, and crime went down really all across the country. And now we've backed away from things we know that work.
Now, I got to ask you about Uvalde, but I want to preface this by saying you're an Abbott guy. I'm an Abbott guy. The governor's going to win handily. Beto is not the answer for Texas. I don't know how many times you have to tell him that at the polls. You got to beat him like three times and then maybe he'll go away. But Uvalde is seared into people's mind. 400 law enforcement officers. You are yourself a law enforcement officer. What happened?
You know, it was a catastrophe. It was the things that make good law enforcement are good training, good recruitment, good supervision. Well-funded law enforcement. They had none of that in Uvalde. If you picture everything that goes wrong, it's an embarrassment to the law enforcement community, a humiliation, and it's a tragedy of tragedies. And we are going to do everything we can to make sure that that never, ever happens again. Now, I'm just telling you, we can make those schools, we can lock them up, we can make them prisons, and someone will stand across the street and shoot with a rifle into the playground. They'll run to the bus, jump on the bus. They'll go to the football games. There's always ways people can do things. But our job is to make it as tough a target as possible, to have as good and well-trained school personnel to deal with it, and to make sure that we've got law enforcement that knows how to deal with that. When I first became a cop, the deal was if you had an active shooter, you secured the perimeter, and then you waited for SWAT. That was the job. That's not the way it's been since Columbine. These officers dealt with it like it was pre-Columbine. They did not go in. I have no idea why. If you and I had been there with no law enforcement training, we'd have been busting out the windows, shooting, doing something. But those officers, there's a time when as an officer, you know, you go in and you may be shot as the first one going in. You may be shot as the second one going in, but that third one or whatever is going to take out that shooter and save those children. That's what should have happened. And there is no excuse at all.
Well, the picture, I hesitate to take the tragedy of tragedies. Well put, Senator King. And apply it anywhere else. But the picture of the law enforcement not moving is a paralysis by leadership. That's not, they're waiting for a command. And that happens in every bureaucracy, in every situation, is if you've got a bad incident commander or a bad deputy section chief in any agency, name it anywhere, things won't happen. How do you train decisiveness into people? And not just, I'm not just talking about Uvalde, but I mean, right now, Liz Truss is going to be the next prime minister of Britain because she has promised to kick rear ends in Whitehall, which is their government, their permanent bureaucracy, and take names and fire people. And we've got too much government.
Well, everything in life is about leadership. In any business, in church, anywhere you're at, in your family, everything is about good leadership. And that's part of the law enforcement community's job is to identify good leaders. And those are the people you move into first line supervisors and on up the line. But I'll tell you one other thing that happened in Uvalde, I'm convinced. Those officers, normally, I don't understand why they didn't go around the incident commander. You had very experienced people that showed up from the state police and others. I think, in part, it was because they are scared right now. Every officer in the state of Texas is concerned that they're going to get indicted by some rogue DA. They're going to get fired. They're going to come under some kind of deal with the media.
Suit.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're worried about everything. And so when you know you don't have any support, the officers I talked to today, they are only doing, at least in the large communities, what they have to do because they're afraid they're going to get in trouble if they do anything else. And I think those officers also were faced with, wait a minute, if I take a risk and I go around this incident commander and I try to take charge and something goes wrong, I'm afraid I'm going to end up indicted or lose my job or something like that.
You know, I think a Republican in a state legislative race or in a congressional race or in a Senate race or running for president has to talk about inflation. They have to talk about crime. That's it. Those are the two issues now. And they can talk about education reform.
Sure.
I've talked with a lot of your colleagues. Let's talk about crime. How does the state legislature help out? Other than funding the police, which the Democrats, by the way, turned down yesterday. They would not fund the police again in the House of Representatives yesterday.
Well, one of the most important things, and you see it all across the country, are these rogue progressives, Soros DAs. In Texas, we've seen them come in almost all of our urban counties, pretty much everything but Fort Worth. And they'll even unelect a sitting Democrat liberal DA for a super liberal Democrat DA that'll come in, and they're not prosecuting. And you go talk to the officers in Dallas and in Houston, and they will tell you, look, we put people in jail, but it does no good because they're not going to prosecute them. Dallas has a policy. If it's a theft, I believe, for under $750, they don't even prosecute it. Well, that just means the world is open to shoplifting anywhere you want to go. Businesses will be closing down because of that and things like that. But also, you know, if the legislature says, whether it's right or wrong, if the legislature says that marijuana is against the law, that was a policy decision made by the legislature, and the law enforcement and the district attorneys have to prosecute and deal with that. If we say a cocaine's against the law, you have to deal with it. We say theft is, and that's a problem. Part of it's a separation of powers issue, and we're struggling with how you get these rogue DAs who are in Texas constitutional officers. We're struggling with how we make them do the job that people expect them to do, which is prosecute bad guys. We want diversion programs. We want mental health. We want drug rehab, all those good things that help rehabilitate people. But people need to be prosecuted. You need to know if you commit a crime, you're going to go to jail.
I have a solution, Senator. Make prosecutors liable for people released without bail who commit crimes. The victims can sue. If they are eligible for bail and they didn't get it, they got a no bail, like the man who attacked Lee Zeldin in Buffalo, could have been jailed. The prosecutor chose not to let him out on no bail. If a prosecutor says no bail and that individual hurt someone, they ought to be 1983 liable or state legislature liable.
Well, now, and don't forget, judges don't have to do what a DA wants.
Right. Right.
A judge, I was a judge for a while. And when the prosecutors bring in, say, hey, we want no bail, or we want $1,000 bail, whatever, it's that judge's choice to say, no, wait a minute, we're not going to do that. And so there's a lot of responsibility there, too. So it's your whole judicial system. In Texas, we've got a lot of great judges. We've got a lot of good DAs. But we've also got some that have really no business being there.
Now, I want to switch over to energy, because Texas made a lot of headlines when the grid collapsed. California had the grid collapse as well. Grids all over the United States. We've spent $7 trillion. We don't have grids that work. What is going on there to make the grids work?
Well, so Texas is unique in that we have a competitive electric grid. If you want to build a power plant, you don't have to get a permit. You can come and build one in Texas. What happened in Texas, and it's totally our fault for letting it happen, but we've got a lot of natural gas. We had coal plants, but the federal government was subsidizing and is wind renewables to come in. And so if you're going to come in a free market model and you're going to build a power plant in Texas, are you going to build one where you get a huge tax subsidy and preferred dispatch? You get to step in line in front of every other power plant that's natural gas or coal. Are you going to come in and build that? Are you going to come in and build a natural gas plant where you got to go pay for your fuel and all that? And so what happened is, for the last 10 years or so, nobody's building thermal plants, gas plants. They're all building wind and solar, and we've got too much of it, and it doesn't show up unless the weather's doing just right, and that's our problem.
Have you changed that?
We are in the process of that right now, and it is going to change.
Now, the federal government keeps throwing money at this. Last night, they announced they're going to throw another billions and billions of dollars at this.
And I will tell you, virtually every problem that Texas has, the big ones, all have their genesis in the federal government.
State Senator Phil King, thank you for joining us from Texas. Take our good wishes back there. Tell Governor Abbott I'm predicting double-digit win, please. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back from the ALEC convention in Atlanta, ALEC.org. Go get the Rich State, Poor State, ALEC.org report. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. As you know, I'm a Virginian. And when I declared early before the primary for Glenn Youngkin, it was because my grandkids are in Virginia schools, and I want them to be as good as the schools that my kids went to in Irvine, California. And Virginia schools are in a crisis. Glenn Youngkin won because of education, so I'm not surprised to find the American Legislative Exchange Council inviting Secretary of Education for the Commonwealth of Virginia, Amy Gadara, to be here at the conference and to talk to me. Secretary, Madam Secretary, welcome. Great to have you.
Thank you so much, Hugh. It's a delight.
Would you, I interviewed Governor Youngkin and Suzanne Youngkin about 2 weeks ago. I'm going to do it again in a couple of weeks about education primarily. It was in front of a group of young conservatives, a lot of parents, and all they want to know about, all they want to talk about is education, Amy Gadara. So he's writing checks that you got to cash. So how are you going to do that?
So I wake up every morning pinching myself to get to work for this governor. His energy, his commitment, his passion, and his vision for education in the Commonwealth is extraordinary. And it's why I am so lucky to have this job to serve him and to serve the people of Virginia. We have a big agenda. And part of that is helping Virginians understand that we do not have quality schools and access to a quality education in every community in the Commonwealth. And that needs to change. It's immoral, it's unacceptable, and it's un-American to not have access to a great quality school in your community. And we're going to change that in Virginia.
That was a given. I'm 66. It was a given that when I went to school, public education, and I went to Catholic schools, mm-hmm. but public schools were fine. They were great. And I hate to say that about Holland High School. If you're listening up there in Holland, I hate that. I hate saying that you've got the best speech and debate team in America, but you do. So it's possible. But again, I got grandkids in the Commonwealth, and they have a very mixed bag. Some mm-hmm. have great schools, and some are looking at, I got to find a private school. How can that be?
So this is what's amazing, right? I came to Virginia the first time 27 years ago for the education system, for both higher ed and in K-12, because we have great schools in Virginia. But the issue is they're not great everywhere. And it came to be because we have not been honest with the people of Virginia about our results. And so part of the reason we put out this report a couple of months ago called A Commitment to Virginians is because we needed to set the level playing ground about how well or how well not we are serving all of our kids. And what we're finding is all of our trend lines are going in the wrong direction. Our results in our state tests have gone down. Our results on NAEP, as you know, the nation's report card, are going down. And our gaps are getting bigger between the haves and have-nots. And that's just unacceptable. And the true travesty is we have not been honest with Virginians. We actually have the largest honesty gap, which is really the difference between our cut scores on our state tests when we tell parents and taxpayers that our kids are proficient, and between what the national report card tells. And that's just not right. We're not being transparent, we're not being honest, and we're not providing the information that policymakers need, that parents need, that students need, and teachers need to make the right decisions that we're serving every child. And look, how we're going to do this, we're going to see every child, we're going to meet them where they are, and we're going to get them where they need to go to be prepared for success in life. And I think that, to me, is one of the biggest changes we're making right now in the Youngkin administration, is we're reminding people that the purpose of an education is to prepare people for success in life. And we're going to define that as, are you ready for the next thing? Are you ready to go into the military? Are you ready to go into further training and education? Are you ready to go into the workplace? And what we're finding is we're not. And so how do we make sure that we're honest with people about where we're doing well and learning from that, and where we're not doing well, and how do we make sure that we don't lose another generation of children?
Learn to read so you can read to learn. Inculcate curiosity and the doctrine of equality, as Dr. King mm-hmm. enunciated it. When I interviewed Governor Youngkin, he said something I have been borrowing from heavily, which is there is no need to teach division, meaning divisive subjects will not be taught in the Virginia schools. Now, of course, Loudoun County is known to everyone in this audience, right? Whether they're in Portland, Oregon, or Seattle, Washington, or down in Tampa and Sarasota, they know exactly what I say. Woke in the school makes the school system broke. What can you do as Education Secretary of the Commonwealth to get divisive subjects out of the curriculum?
Well, the first thing we did, I mean, within an hour of the governor being sworn into office, he signed Executive Order 1, which was exactly that, of saying we are going to restore excellence to education and we are ending any practice of discriminatory behavior and anything that can qualify as a divisive issue. You know, look, we know, and we put out a report 30 days later that reported and cataloged examples that we were finding across the Commonwealth, of whether it be privilege bingo happening in Fairfax County, whether it be the training that was happening, the anti-racist training that was happening across, and the examples where we're putting students into positions that nobody should be put into, of ascribing blame and guilt to them on things that have happened generations and centuries ago. And it's wrong. And one of our commitments is that this has been misconstrued, is that we're not going to allow history to be taught. This governor is doubling down on saying, of course we need to teach all of our history, the good and the bad and the ugly. And we're going to have the best history standards in the nation. Right now, we're in our cycle of reviewing them. We're going to have tons of public comment on there to make sure that these really represent Virginians, all Virginians' story. And we're also going to make sure that we are putting in place the country's best training for our histories and civics teachers so that they know how to teach these hard topics, right? It is a hard conversation to have about slavery and racism, but we know that the way to do it is not to ascribe systemic racism and white supremacy. That's not how we're going to do it. And so we're doubling down on great standards, high standards, comprehensive standards, and training for all of our teachers so we make sure that our students are prepared to be engaged and informed members of our democracy.
Secretary Guderra, members of the military come out of the officer corps and they have served in combat. They have led platoons. They have done whatever. They're not accredited to teach. Mm-hmm. I've always thought this is just insane. The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt grew up in Fallbrook, where there were four full colonels on the faculty retired who moved from being a colonel in the Marine Corps into teaching history. What are you going to do about accreditation that has become If you get a master's in education, I salute you, but sometimes you don't learn a lot with a master's in education.
So, Hugh, the data is so strong on this that having a master's in education doesn't add any value to student learning in the classroom. So we are absolutely not going to go down that path, and we'll be changing that. And to your point about veterans, you know, Virginia is blessed to be home to unbelievable active military and retired military. And this administration, Governor Youngkin, is doing everything possible to make Virginia the place where we want to welcome the military and have them retire there, have their families there. And so one of the things we're talking about is how do we get these great Americans to be in our schools more? You know, we have an incredible crisis as of everywhere on learning loss. And how do we tap into this wonderful pool of talented and career folks and patriots that we need in our schools? So whether it be helping with tutoring with learning loss or thinking about how do we also approach our teacher shortage, all things are on the table, but we're going to make sure we do things that are proven and that get results and are not just plays that the teachers union want us to do to make sure that everybody gets more money.
Secretary, as well, if you go to England, you hear on the tube, mind the gap. Mm-hmm. We got to remember the gap in the United States, the gap that occurred because of COVID. And we've got to work overtime to get those kids caught up. In San Diego Unified School Districts, they have reintroduced masks. In Minnesota, Mike Gallagher, Congressman extraordinaire, brought to my attention that they're thinking about reintroducing masks in the Minnesota, in the Minneapolis schools. Mm-hmm. What is the position on Virginia on masking kits?
So that was our executive order number 2, followed up by legislation. The governor signed on reaffirming parents' rights to shape and be in charge of their children's well-being and education. And so we followed that up with a really important piece of legislation that codified the rights of parents to make decisions about whether their children are masked or not. And so we also just issued guidance 2 weeks ago that because we're having a huge issue in our childcare centers in terms of following the quarantine guidance by CDC. And it was disrupting not only families' lives and children and learning, but also the ability of Virginians to go back to work, right? We're hearing from parents, I can't go to my job because I don't know whether the school or the childcare center is going to be closed. So this is a huge ecosystem piece of we've got to deal with this pandemic as an endemic. We have to look at the science of this, and the science is saying our kids can be in school. And so we are trying to do everything possible to make sure that our children are in situations where they are having access to learning and also providing the ability for our parents and citizens to work and have some semblance of normalcy.
I'm talking with Education Secretary Gadara of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Glenn Youngkin brought her in. The governor told me that he made quite a few appointments to the Board of Regents right away. Mm-hmm. And so the university system, is that under your purview?
It is.
All right. So we've got to abolish tenure. I say that as a tenured member of the Chapman University School of Law and have been tenured since 1996. And it's wonderful, allegedly protects free speech. We'll see how that lasts in the law school environment in the next 10 years. But tenure is actually a deterrent to education excellence. What do you think about that in the Commonwealth?
So we haven't touched that yet. We're not talking about it. But I'll tell you this, both, you know, the beauty of this position as secretary is that I get to work on education from early childhood all the way through post-secondary.
That is terrific.
And it's awesome because we need to do more of just blowing up the status quo that exists at all points in that. And the status quo of one size fits all education, doing everything the same way, having systems that have been in place for millennial, not just centuries, tenure being one of them. How do we do, you know, the academy and how do we make sure that we are thinking about how do we create the world's greatest talent development machine? And that means why do we talk about things in 2-year and 4-year timeframes? Why aren't we talking about competency and mastery of skills and knowledge that we know our workplace needs? And so we're going to be starting a commission looking at the future of higher education.
I'll put my hand
Virginia.
Up.
Okay, good. You can
I'm
come join. We're looking. That's awesome.
I've got to ask you, yesterday I had a Mississippi fellow in telling me that they had at one point a 4-year waiting list trying to find people, four years of demand for skilled laborers in their shipyard. Yeah. People don't come out of high school with any vocational skills. And are you going to do something about that?
Yes, we are at every point. So this is both in our community college system, our 4-year and our K-12. First of all, we're going to make sure we have a new office in Virginia that is going to start producing actionable labor market information by region. So we're going to have we're probably going to have the country's best data on labor market information. We are going to use that at all points to really design programs in education and making sure that we're putting public dollars to incent those programs and people to go into those programs and get the skills. We're also going to double down on apprenticeships and making sure that we have as much work-based experience as possible. We're also, and I'm really excited about this, and this is one of the governor's main priorities, we have $100 million that were just appropriated to start these lab schools, innovation lab schools. And the idea there is to really build the partnership between higher education but also and K-12, but also to bring in partners from the business community, from the employers, from outside bodies, to bring the world beyond the school walls alive and to show what does it look like to work in that shipyard? Why does it matter to learn your math and your computation, your problem solving, and to give that exposure to work and make it come alive for kids so they understand the career pathways that exist. So we have 300,000 jobs that are open in Virginia right now that we can't fill. We know our competitive advantage in Virginia are our people, and the war for talent is on, and we are going to do everything possible to make sure that Virginians are prepared for the jobs of today and jobs of tomorrow.
Now, teachers' ideology should not be a factor in elementary and secondary education. It is always a factor in college and higher education, terminal degrees. How do you guarantee diversity in ideology? Because Ilya Shapiro was banished from Georgetown University because of a tweet that wasn't even offensive. What do you, the academy has really gone off the rails at the highest levels. Right.
So we just put a requirement in as part of our legislative process this session that every single one of our public institutions, 2-year and 4-year, have to report on an annual basis their commitment to protecting and promoting free speech, free inquiry, and diversity of political thought on campus. The governor is meeting on a quarterly basis with all of the presidents, and this is the number one topic we'll be talking about next month. And we are asking all of the presidents to gather together and have a statement collectively for Virginia universities and colleges, akin to the University of Chicago commitment to free speech. And we're also, just one last thing, we are bringing in all of our boards of visitors in October, and we'll be doing a day of training, and one of the topics will be on a statement of free speech and free inquiry.
We have 1 minute. Secretary Gadara, I have urged my listeners not to vote for any incumbent school board member anywhere unless they are absolutely rock solid certain that they are committed to excellence in schools. Loudoun County is the poster child for indifferent to parents and closed to a good idea. Are the school boards waking up that they're all going to get fired?
So I think this is one of the most amazing parts of this revolution is the power of parents being engaged, being informed, and being active, and reminding people that where decisions make are at local school boards, and there's no more important race than these school board races.
Secretary Gadara, thank you for joining me. We'll be back with the final segment of today's Hugh Hewitt Show from Atlanta. Stay tuned.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.